finally, 4 years of podcasting, and I finally get to talk to the man himself. You're my first, Scott. You're my very first Starship captain.
Wow.
Well.
And it cost you.
It did. It cost me. Enjoy that coffee.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 232, Quantum Enterprise Man. You always remember your first Starship captain. I finally got to sit down for an extended conversation with Scott Bakula, star of Quantum Leap, The Current Men of a Certain Age, and of course, Star Trek Enterprise, where he played Captain Jonathan Archer and commanded the very first starship to bear that name. We both happened to be at a nighttime fundraiser on the Santa Monica Pier, so we grabbed some coffee and found a not terribly quiet corner where he could reveal the secrets of his surprisingly nerdy career. The Reduced Shakespeare Company is made up of distinguished actors, as you know.
Yes, which is why I've never been invited. Go ahead.
What? But it's also, we're also big effing nerds.
Yes.
You know, and you have been on two of the hugest sci-fi television franchises in recent memory. Although Quantum Leap was not that recent ago.
That hurts my feelings.
I'm sorry.
I'm just grateful that you can remember it.
I didn't have to go there, did I? Were you ever a nerd? Were you that kind of a sci-fi nerd? Were you just a theater guy who got a gig?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm a theater guy, so I fall into some kind of a
nerd category.
Category there, which we'll leave alone. But no, I mean, I loved sci-fi when I was a kid, and I loved reading sci-fi, and I can remember because people in this day and age, but I can remember going to see 2001 in the huge wraparound screen. Remember that what was it called? Not the Transluxe Cinema, but something crazy.
But not
like
the Cinerama, but kind of.
Yeah, but it was wrapped, the monkeys were, the apes were 30 feet tall, and it was insane.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always talk about Ray Bradbury and being just so overwhelmed by how what he wrote about and how he wrote about it.
Right.
So, I love science fiction. So what are the odds that I would get to, you know, have a career that if those two projects plus about almost at least four other sci-fi projects that I've been paid to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's just weird.
It is weird. I mean, really, how does one train for that? You know?
You know what? I think the thing is, I believe.
Yeah.
So when I get a script and they're like, okay, this is the part where you transport in and you're such and such. And I'm like, okay, I believe that. I believe that so I can act that. And I'm not going, this is stupid or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm down with it. That you have to imagine that there's a 20-foot flaming creature that Clive Barker is imagined in his own mind.
Right.
And can you do that? And it's like, yeah, I get that. I can do that.
Well, and that is such a great lesson, actually, because when my first professional gig out of college was directing children's theater with a bunch of college students and graduate students who, several of whom would sniff and kind of go, oh, really? You know, Hansel and Gretel, there's a monster, really? I went, if you guys are lucky enough to get into some sort of green screen situation where you have to pretend that there's something going on, and that's the thing, and the example I used, this was during Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yep.
The example I used at the time was Patrick Stewart, distinguished Shakespearean actor, is doing the exact same thing we're doing.
Yeah.
Just pretending and believing. And that's so much of it.
Yeah, well, I jump into this Clive Barker movie, but when I did Lord of Illusions and they said, I said, well, what else has Clive done? And they're like, well, you know, this little Hellraiser franchise and things like that.
Yeah.
So I went and got the original Hellraiser movie.
Wow.
And I was fascinated by this woman who was playing the lead in that movie. And so I went to Clive and said, where did you get her?
Yeah.
And he said, well, she's right out of the Royal Shakespeare, she's right out of there. And she was at the Old Vic doing, such and such 2 weeks ago. And in England, everybody does everything.
Yes.
There's no like, oh, you can't do TV,
right.
You can't do a commercial, you can't do,
right.
Everybody does everything.
They go from the Royal Shakespeare Company to Doctor Who.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's no like, noses in the air or anything. So I always thought that was a great you know, and she was extraordinary in it, and she because she was a wonderful actress, right. Not because she was good at playing, you know, spooky ghosts and scary things.
Well, and the casting folks for the Star Trek franchise here often looked for classically trained actors who had that ability to create that world, and particularly for aliens, I guess, because they did so much of it with their voice underneath all that makeup.
Yes, and they had to understand language and how to, you know, you couldn't just, it wasn't an ad-lib situation where you could kind of stumble through and, create some ums and uhs and, you know, there was a rhythm and a cadence to it that they insisted upon.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know how I snuck by, but
before Quantum Leap, what was your, was your training in the classics? I know you're a song and dance man. I know you're a hoofer.
Yes, no, I hadn't trained in, I had one classic class in Greek theater at HB Studios in New York, and that Aaron Frankel taught, and it was insane, and I loved every second of it, but that was the extent of it.
That was the extent of it. Were you a song and dance man, and that's where...
Song and dance man, and I wrote a wonderful... Here's the extent of my classic. In high school, for my high school English senior project, I wrote a rock musical to Shakespearean play that cannot be mentioned. But I could do most of it for you still in case anybody out there is interested.
That is way nerdy.
It was good. But I had a rock and roll band, so that takes the nerd curse off of it.
Yeah.
And we performed it.
Right.
So we all went to the theater, and my band showed up, and I sang this 8 or 12 songs that I'd written to, The Witches 3, Met on the Heath, to Tell Macbeth What Will Be, and, you know.
And where can we download these songs?
They're not available at the moment. I'm polishing them.
In the vault.
Yeah.
But William Shatner had the transformed man, and you got your score to the Scottish play.
Wait a minute. And it worked for Shatner.
It did work for Shatner.
I'm going to think about that. Yeah, that's a good idea. And I'll give you part of whatever I make from it.
So you did Quantum Leap. Yeah. And that made you a legitimate celebrity.
Huge. Or as Donald would say, huge.
Huge
star.
Are you still a celebrity?
Huge.
Huge.
Well, no, I never consider myself a celebrity. You know, Quantum Leap had this great... everybody knew about it, but it wasn't a hit.
Okay.
Like in the day. Because it was like, you know, we were like... 48 in the weekly rating when the ratings came out, and we had a huge number back in those days.
Yeah.
48, we probably had 12-13 million people watching us every week, but we weren't like, it wasn't like I was a top 10 show. Like, I'm working with Ray Romano now, and he was on the number one show on television for years, and that's just a different
level.
So that's celebrity to me. I'm like, I'm very well known. I'm well known all over the planet because of the sci-fi aspect, because sci-fi is timeless, and you can. It plays everywhere.
Right.
You put a voice in Russian or Italian or whatever, and
but it's your face.
It's my face, and the only thing they don't dub is my singing, which is nice.
That is nice. Well, and what was it like then to come aboard the Enterprise? I mean, but not only the Enterprise, but just the juggernaut that is the kind of Star Trek, corporation.
Yeah, it was.
Was that hard?
It was. You know, I think the best thing that happened was I didn't have a lot of time to think about it. When I think about it, when I step back, it's kind of daunting. But I also forgave myself because in the beginning, because I started to get worried about it, and I thought, wait, I'm going to be the first captain. So I don't have to follow anybody else.
Yeah.
In my own head.
Yeah.
I'm not following Shatner. I'm not following Patrick Stewart. I'm not following anybody else.
Right.
So I can't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
So that was like my pass.
Yeah.
That was like my little entree into the world. And I was like, screw them. They have to follow me. It's not my problem.
Right.
So and that just kind of took, the onus, the fear of, whoa, aren't you worried? And people are going to compare you. And of course they did anyway, and they do anyway. But I wasn't comparing myself.
Right.
I wasn't stuck standing back and saying,
Well, and at a certain point, you can only do your work. You can't, you can't worry about all that other stuff. I mean, people do, but what can you do about it?
Yeah, but I mean, everybody's like, well, did you study and did you watch? And I didn't have to do any of that stuff. I didn't have time.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't say, well, I'm going to go back and watch all the original episodes or whatever. I was like,
That's the kind of thing I would have done,
because I might have done it if I'd had time. Yeah. I might have, been a little smarter about it,
right.
But I didn't have time, so I just said, the contract got worked out on a Wednesday or something. We sat and had lunch with the cast on Friday, and we started shooting, you know, like somewhere the next week. So,
well, and you and yeah, and as you say, you are part of the invention of the history.
Yeah.
Of this entire thing.
Yeah, and I also was the first. Patrick might take issue with this, but he's going to have to. You know, we fight all the time, but. I was the first person that I can think of actually that they hired who was already a known, pretty much a known quantity.
Right.
Now Patrick was known in England, so that's where he might take. But right. You know, you go back to LeVar and you go back
but
to the people
right.
from the
yeah.
original series, and even
yeah.
Bill and
yeah.
and Leonard and everything. They had a certain thing going, but they
yeah.
weren't. I was a known.
Yeah.
Celebrity
sure.
coming into this thing.
Yeah, well, and they knew they. Yeah, we knew who you were because you were the guy from Quantum
right.
Leap. Yeah.
So I had to battle
and romance,
that.
Romance on Broadway.
Well, thank you. Of course,
yeah.
I knew that was your first thought, but you thought you'd unnerded, you'd down nerded a little bit.
Thank you.
But
yeah, you're right.
I was
LeVar
battling that a little bit because there were expectations, but that was also one of the reasons why they asked me to do it because they traded on that and
yeah.
and we got some really great numbers when we started out and people were that was part of the tune in was that I was doing it. So.
Well, and you're right. LeVar Burton was the celebrity of the next generation. He was the most well-known guy on that when it came out.
Yeah, except here, anyway, in the States. Patrick would argue probably that he's more well-known than all of us put together.
And, yes.
And continues to rise in that.
Yeah. Well, and he might win the argument if only by virtue of his accent.
Yes.
He might sound the most
yeah.
impressive regardless.
Exactly. Speaking of Shakespeare.
Well, all right. Well, and then where do you come down? All right, you Kirk or Picard?
Oh, I'm a Kirk guy.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny because...
That's good. I thought your answer would be Archer. But
yeah. No.
Yeah.
No. No, we did the show for 4 years. And I never met Bill. He was never around. There was a rumor that he'd wanted to do the show, and he'd figured out a way that he could, you know, he'd written an episode, and he was going to, you know. And it was like, that was very exciting and very
yeah.
kind of
cool.
But he was never around. Then I got it in my head that I wanted to be on Boston Legal because Bill was on it and Candace Bergen was on it, and I'd done Murphy Brown a bunch of episodes with her.
Yes, of course.
And I thought this is perfect because they winked at the camera so much on that show.
Yeah.
This is going to be great because
yeah.
Bill and I will pass in the hallway, even if it's just a walk by and we
yeah.
just look at each other and say, whatever it is.
Perfect.
Priceless, right?
Yeah, it's priceless.
So they offered me a role and I didn't like the role, and I said, you know what? I know this sounds stupid, but I'm going to hold out. I just have a feeling that if I'm lucky enough, I don't know David Kelly. I've never worked for him. I'm a
right.
big fan of his. All this.
Right.
I'm just going to cross my fingers that something else will come along.
Yeah.
And like a year and a half later, they sent me this script. And I got to sing, play the piano.
Wow.
I wrote my own arrangement to the song.
Mm.
And I was romancing Candace.
Oh.
I had not one scene with Bill.
Oh!
Not only that, our schedules didn't even cross.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't meet him again. So 5 years, last summer, I met him for the first time. And he's got the show in Canada that he does. And I'm sure he's got a show being produced in Canada called The Five Captains.
Oh, interesting.
He went around the world and, you know, he found Patrick in England and he went and found Avery and he did. And so he called and said, would I be up for this interview?
Yeah.
That's the first time I met him. And we met on camera.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very
cool. Well, and then that was going to be my next question. I mean, it's like, you know, they talk about, Bill Clinton and the two Bush presidents didn't get along, and Obama hated Bush, and blah, 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 blah. And yet, they're the only guys, plus Carter, who are alive who've done that job.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys, plus I'm blanking on her name now. Janeway.
Kate Mulgrew. Yeah.
Are the only ones who've, you know, headed up a starship.
Yeah, and actually, I'm the only one who's flown a starship and traveled in time. So I really, the group gets much smaller.
Wait, Shatner traveled in time, did he? But he didn't fly?
No, but he. I'm the only one who's actually flown because when when they did there in the '60s, there weren't starships, but there are now, and that's why I got the job because we were out there.
Right, were actually out there.
Yeah, that was more or less a reality kind of a show.
So it was kind of a documentary.
Basically.
Yes,
basically.
I see. Yeah.
But Shatner,
just pretending.
They were faking it.
Oh, yeah. I see.
They were just a couple of weeks away from the spaceships with the little strings flying through the frame.
Hello. This is Elizabeth Dennehy, otherwise known as Lieutenant Commander Shelby from Star Trek Next Generation. Welcome to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast. Well, at least it's not a convention.
Where can you RSC the RSC? I have no idea, because in 20 minutes, I am heading to the airport to catch a plane to New Zealand. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
I just caught an episode of Enterprise. I'm sci-fi, maybe. It's flipping through it, and I always have to watch at least half.
If you see it, you got to watch
it. You got to stick with it.
You know I'm on it.
You're on it. But, you know, I had to...
You were watching in the car on the way over, really. Be honest.
No, you know what I was watching in this episode? I was watching your ass, because it was this episode. Suddenly, it was your ass, and I went, what is going on? And then you walked away from the camera. Jolene Blanlock turned around, you know, walked towards the camera, and then turned to face you, and suddenly it's her ass, which, no offense, I preferred.
Yes.
But I'm going, what's going on behind the camera here at Enterprise, where they're going, you know what would be a good angle? Good angle is just right kind of waist height behind Archer, you know? And T'Pring, T'Pol, T'Pow, whatever her name was.
Yes. I remember that shot.
I bet you do. You know, dude, you've been working out, and it looked good.
No, just my ass. That's all. I've only been working out my ass. Because when I was working with her ass, then you needed to have, you know, you had to work out. Everybody was working their asses out.
So you didn't use a stunt
ass? Off, I mean.
You didn't use a stunt ass?
No, you know what? I have to go back and look at that episode, because there definitely were times when stunt asses were working.
It was really funny. It was so funny. It was like, what the hell's going on back here? Well, and yet now you've moved away and you're playing a man of a certain age.
Yes.
Is that different? Is it exciting? I know it's fun to have a gig, you know, particularly with, you know, somebody like, I mean, it's such a great cast. Ray Romano, you, Andre Brower, all three phenomenal actors in different ways.
Yes. We're all completely different. We all work completely in completely different ways.
Well, and it was also one of my mom's favorite shows. You captured the hearts of many women of a certain age.
Good.
But I read an article about how Men of a Certain Age is a hit amongst women.
Yes.
Because it's, maybe you probably saw the same article, because it's not about, you guys are all, you know, in various stages of marriage and singlehood and divorce and whatever, but you're not hitting up on 20-something. All your dates are age-appropriate, except sort of for your character.
Yeah, I was going to say, except for me.
But you don't...
So one-third of the group did have the 25-year-old girlfriend.
But don't you strike out as much as you succeed? Isn't that part of the reality of the show?
The charm of my character is that he's not terribly successful at really anything. so he's not like just mowing over the young girls and leaving them in a heap on the side of the road. He's a lovable Peter Pan-ish kind of fellow.
Yeah. Who is, for those who don't know the show, a kind of, not a failed actor, but an actor who's not as far along in his career as he would like to be. Is that fair?
Failed,
okay. Failed is
more accurate.
Another way to say that.
He is trying to come to grips with being his age and not having made it. And and he has a temp job, and so he can stay available for those auditions, which don't really come along. But it's an excuse to avoid commitment, avoid growing up, still waiting, staying single, you know, just got to be available.
Yes.
You know.
Well, and these are all things that you have to dredge from memory now, right? Because
a successful man as you.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Well, no, the character's not at all like me, and except that I was an actor and still am at times. But I was a struggling actor for at times, and so I certainly can relate to that.
You are a devoted family man.
I am a devoted family man. I have responsibilities in my life.
Yes.
I'm in a long-term relationship. I have children, mortgage, all of those kinds of things. So in terms of this guy's lifestyle and the choices that he's made, we don't operate in the same way, but I love the guy, and it's so much fun to play an actor. It's just it's always great to,
because there's so much you can send up. And
And you just have the inside track and the wink on everything, and it's
well, and those of us who watch it who are actors are going, ouch! Oh, I've been there. Yes,
yes. We had the classic scene in the first season where I go to an audition, and it's for some Lifetime movie, I think, called Cry Bobby, and I'm waiting in the audition line outside with 50 other guys, cattle call, and the guy in front of us is killing it. And we can hear
the applause. This is the pilot. Yes,
yes.
I remember. Yeah.
Hear the applause in the hallway.
Yeah.
And the guy comes out, and the casting director is with him, and she's wiping tears from her face because he's just killed it. And then she says, thank you, and she squeezes his hand, and he goes off into the sunset, and she turns and calls, Terry?
Yeah.
And I offer the other guys, anybody else who'd like to go next, you're welcome to go follow. And they said, no, we're fine. You go, pal.
Well, it's a very funny show. If people haven't seen the show, you check it out. It's on TNT, but it's a very funny show. But the other thing that always, I've been teased about being a celebrity, because I always love the interviews where they ask, you know, well-known, famous actors, successful actors, how did you choose this project? And, you know, I know if they asked me, the answer would be, how did I choose it? I auditioned. They gave me the part. Yeah. I said yes. That there is no choice about that. Do you... I assume, and many people assume, well, Scott Bakula, he can write his own ticket now, right? I mean, you could just do whatever you want. You just say, you turn down stuff all the time. Is that how it is? How wrong am I?
No, you're pretty wrong. Pretty wrong.
It's not the first time.
No, but I know. But it's all right. I tell people this all the time. Every audition's different. Every job is different. And how you come to things most of the time is different. Very seldom and I've been doing this a long time now, has the phone rung and they've said, would you like to have this part, without having to meet somebody, audition for something.
Right.
And in this particular instance, I hadn't met Ray Romano before. I didn't know Andre Brower. They sent me the script, and I always go by the script. It's and if the script is bad, I don't care who it is, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And whether they're offering it to me or auditioning or not. But if I like the script, then I'm willing to do, I'll go in and read, I'll go in and meet, I don't care. Because the good scripts are so few and far between.
Right.
This was a great script. Ray said that he wanted to meet people, and because he was concerned about the chemistry between the three guys.
Yeah.
I got that.
Sure.
And I also wanted to meet them, because I didn't know Ray. I didn't know Mike Royce, who wrote it with him. I didn't know Andre Brower. I never got to meet Andre until we started working together. But I wanted to spend some time with them and see, you know, you spend a lot of life with these people if the show works.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, maybe they aren't guys I want to hang out with. So we had this kind of mutual feeling out meeting, and we all said, we talked, told stories and talked about our family and our kids and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went back another time and auditioned, and we spent an hour putting stuff on tape to send to the network. So, and Ray read with me, and Mike kind of directed us and gave us some ideas, and we talked about stuff. And so I got it the old-fashioned way.
That's the same way
I got, you know, Quantum Leap years ago. I didn't have the first introductory meeting of, maybe if I like you guys, I'll read. I went in, but.
Well, and I can imagine, I mean, back then for Quantum Leap, nobody knew who you were.
No.
So they were kind of taking an unknown, they were taking their own leap. And I imagine probably sometimes your celebrity hurts you getting a gig. Is that true, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it hurts. And the other thing that hurts in this day and age, when you've had a show like Quantum Leap, Star Trek Enterprise, or whatever, but no shows ever go away anymore because of all the networks and all the channels now. You don't disappear and all of a sudden show up and be fresh again.
Yeah, right.
Or new, or I wonder what Bakula looks like. Nobody's seen him in 5 years, and you walk in the room and they're like, hey, you know, this, hey, this is all of a sudden, this is hot, this is an exciting idea. Yeah. Everybody sees you. Yeah. Everybody knows that they're flipping channels like you're doing. It's like, oh, you know, I see him. Yeah. In the old days, that didn't happen. You did something, yeah. It was on, yeah. You went away, you yeah. came back, you reinvented yourself, you grew a beard, whatever, you gained 30 pounds, whatever, and you were a different person.
A new guy.
You don't get to do that anymore. So, and a lot of people, because of Quantum Leap, really, I was an unidentifiable type. Because I did so many different things.
Yes, that the beauty of Quantum Leap as an actor
for me yeah. was that. Yeah. But the curse of it a little bit was it wasn't. I didn't fit into the classic what cubby hole.
Yeah.
He's this guy. Well, is he a comedian? Yeah. Is he a dramatic guy? Yeah. Is he he sings sometimes too? Right. And then he's like a kind of a jock and he doesn't.
And you're a leading man who has a boyish quality.
I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm not really a leading man. I'm not. I don't look like I'm not Clooney and those guys or yeah. Cruise or
yeah.
those people. So I I'm kind of an odd
yeah.
thing. So I think for a while it kind of hurt me that I was like, well, who is everybody felt like they knew me, yeah. but they weren't really sure how they wanted to use me.
Right.
So
right.
I've been lucky. I've been able to do a million different things.
It's all good. Yeah.
I've had a great variety, which is all what I always wanted to do in my career and just do different things. And I've been lucky that way.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your catchphrase via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, science officer Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Matthew Clark. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Elizabeth Dennehy and to Scott Bakula. We ran over this week, Scott. Thank you very much. I owe you another coffee. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 232-696th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
If Captain Archer had a tagline, what would it be?
I don't know.
Holy crap, look at that star. No, that's not
no,
it.
No, that wasn't it. Okay, keep working your asses off, boys. They might be in a shot someday. Back to those glute machines, everybody.
Scott, thank you for that fantastic ending.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.